Radio. This is your host, Webster Tarpley, in Washington, D.C., and this is now our final vote, final program before the November 4th general election. So we've got a lot to cover. We will try to bring you some guests from the various political fighting fronts, but mainly we've got to talk about the strategic situation in general. First of all, commending your attention to Obama, the Postmodern Coup, the Making of a Manchurian Candidate, available at Amazon.com. Barack H. Obama, the Unauthorized Biography, available at Amazon.com. The Obama, the Postmodern Coup, continues to be the number one book on Obama, on the United States, on elections and other topics in Germany, where it has dominated the entire season because it's the only realistic portrayal of the demagogue Obama available in a whole blizzard of adulatory fawning literature. We've got to face now the fact that this election goes right down to the wire. It is undecided. You must ignore the brainwashing of the controlled Wall Street media who are attempting to convince you that the race is over, that Obama is unbeatable, and that a combination of the black vote, the youth vote, and the left liberal vote is enough to determine an election. If that had been the case, we would have had President McGovern, President Dukakis, and so on down the line. This is a very, very close race. It is obscured by the fact, of course, that it is a postmodern coup, an exercise in mass brainwashing. You are warned in particular that the climate of media hysteria and deliberate systematic media brainwashing that is now being perpetrated is unprecedented since the post 9/11 period. At certain moments during the run up to the Iraq war. But basically, this is now the same brainwashing apparatus, the same mind control apparatus that was mobilized in the wake of 9/11 is now being mobilized, the same people in many cases, and they are now bringing you Barkey, the same people who brought you the absurd, racist, militarist 9/11 myth, the same people who brought you the catastrophic Iraq war. Those same people, Joe Biden among them, are now trying to bring you Barkey for president. It is a postmodern coup, a color revolution. That's what I read about in Obama, the Postmodern Coup. And don't be looking for other coups. Don't think that there's going to be some kind of military seizure of power with tanks in the streets. That is not the coup. That's the old style. That's the right-wing Bush-Cheney neocon approach, which has been dumped for the moment. For this period coming up, we're headed into an abortive interlude where the U.S. ruling class dresses itself in left-wing slogans in order to regroup and relaunch itself against the world. Now, if you look at all of these polls taken recently, you'll see that the race comes down to 3 or 4 points in the more realistic polls, which means that it's tied, or indeed that Obama is behind because of the obvious brainwashing attempts by the controlled Wall Street media. There is a great reticence and reluctance on the part of the average person to answer these pollsters. We have very, very high rates of people who refuse to answer the pollsters, and we have very high rates of people who basically don't say what their real intentions are, because essentially all polling is push polling in the current situation. Every ruling class polling organization is engaged in an implicit push poll when you factor in the influence of these media whores in the controlled Wall Street media. So you've got to compare this to past cases like the French vote to reject the European Constitution back in May of 2005. All the institutions are attempting to browbeat and hector and bludgeon the American people into accepting the darling of Wall Street, Obama, the exterminating angel of deadly killer austerity, the architect of new confrontations, this time not with third-rate powers in the Middle East, but with first-class powers like Russia and China. That is what Wall Street wants. Obama is their ticket to it. We're told in particular that in the battleground states, we'll go through them later, this is now a very, very tight race. So do not be disoriented. Now, how to vote? Let me repeat this now for the final time. The overriding concern is to stop Obama and his fascist movement at all costs. I say fascist referring back to fascism, that is to say, to the young Mussolini between 1919 and 1922, a movement which was not a top-down police state operation. It did not depend primarily, at least or visibly, on government repression, but it was a gutter snipe movement coming up from the gutters, coming up from the streets, hooligans, goons, thugs, fervently idealistic students, young nationalists, idealists, and so forth, radical trade unionists, disgruntled war veterans, the creative class, the leading writers, painters, sculptors, architects of Italy after World War I became fascists. The creative class today goes for Obama, and it's a movement of national rebirth, of creating a new man, of restoring the position of the country in the world, of overcoming class struggle and partisan bickering with the mystical unity of the nation. And it's organized around the personality cult of the Duce, of the charismatic, telegenic in our time, demagogue who, with his beatific personality, with his utopian and messianic rhetoric that he spouts, is supposed to lead to an overcoming of the previous divisions, the class struggle and interest conflicts that are real and that are the basis of politics in a democratic society based on representative government. It's an anti-parliamentary movement, and you'll see that if Barkey ever gets to the White House. We also have the famous Michelle Obama broken souls quotations, the idea that alienation can be overcome by this movement. All of this is typical of the fascist movements of the past, and in particular the classic case, Mussolini, the revolutionary socialist, a real leftist with leftist credentials going far beyond those of the milquetoast leftist foundation-funded poverty pimp operative Obama. So stop Obama at all costs. Don't experiment with fascist movements. Secondly, in terms of congressional voting, it's important to punish any elected official who voted for the bailout. You should move within the limits of your ability to punish and eject from office any member of the House or the Senate who voted to give $700 billion to Wall Street in a futile attempt to try to bail out the derivatives bubble. Finally, what we want to come out of this with is, of course, divided government. We have two gangs. We have one gang of reactionaries and one gang of fascists. The reactionaries, the Republicans. The fascists, Obama, Pelosi, Reid, and that clique inside the Democratic Party. What can we hope for from these two groups? Nothing at all except to play one against the other, to try to institutionalize their conflict and get as much relief out of that as we can. It is the only hope, the only path. It is not particularly optimistic. It is a grim situation. You must be a great realist, recognize that the situation is very, very grim, but that a reactionary is still better than a fascist. People who argue otherwise have not learned the lesson of Italy 1922 and Germany 1933. People went around saying, well, in Italy, after World War I, these prime ministers, Facta, Nitti, Salandra, they're so bad, who could be worse? Mussolini taught them who could be worse. In Germany, they said, what could be worse than Brüning? Hitler gave a lesson in what could be infinitely worse. We'll be back in a minute.
Cascadia Public Radio.
back to World Crisis Radio. Let's go immediately to one of our distinguished guests from the area around Eau Claire, Wisconsin, a little bit west of Madison, Wisconsin. We're joined by the Libertarian candidate for the United States House of Representatives, Kevin Barrett, joining us for a last update right before the vote. Welcome, Kevin.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Webster. How are you?
It's good to have you with us. I have to apologize. I was covering Phil Berg at the Supreme Court yesterday, so I was not able to talk about what we would discuss today. So let me just give it to you. You're running for House of Representatives, and give us your final statement here in this segment.
Well, it's been a pretty good final week here of the campaign. Back on Tuesday, we did finally have the long-awaited debate, and I really did tear into Ron Kind pretty good, while at the same time keeping a pretty good demeanor. You know, I wasn't snarling or anything, and you know, I think it went over really well. I mean, if the whole, you know, if lots of people were watching this, I would get a lot of votes. So that debate went great. It is available online through the University of Wisconsin La Crosse. And it will be up at my website, hopefully tonight. I already have sent out the URL. So that debate was really, really fun. You know, I actually think I won it. You know, the expectations for me were probably pretty low among people who don't know me. And as I was leaving, all sorts of people were coming up to me and saying, well, I don't really agree with you, but, you know, you did a terrific job. So that was really satisfying.
Can you just give us two or three issues that came up? Did the bailout come up?
Oh, did it ever? Yeah. I tore into Kind primarily on the bailout. And the related question of what do we do with this financial crisis? And, of course, my answer, like yours, Webster, is lend directly from the Treasury to the people as a graduated phase-out of the Federal Reserve. And then we, on the war, Ron Kind is very vulnerable because he's voted for the war at every step along the way. Even though he's a Democrat, he's had to actually go against his own party a couple of times. And so I was pretty forceful about that, pointing out that it's a criminal war of aggression. In fact, aggression being the supreme war crime, it's therefore the worst crime that a human being can commit on Earth, and our whole federal government has committed it. And so those were the two biggest issues. And I wish I talked a little more about the loss of freedom post 9/11, but I did get in a couple of digs on that one, too.
Tremendous. So what's your last-minute get-out-the-vote effort?
Well, you know, I wish I had $1 million or so that Ron Kind has, including more than $200,000 from the financial services industry, which may be why he voted for that bailout, so I could pay people to go door-to-door and I could, you know, be blasting people with ads all over the place. We do have a final radio ad coming out. There was a surge of contributions there in the last month, so I have a one-minute radio ad that's going to be playing in friendly parts of the district. And you know, I'm going to try and get out there and make some noise. See if I can get one last publicity stunt in for Monday and Tuesday.
What's the theme of the last minute radio ad?
It's primarily the bailout. It's if people want to hear it, it should be available very soon, if not already, at RadioDuJour.com. It's kind of a half humorous but half deadly serious rant directed at politicians. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm not a politician like these other guys, and I don't have the kind of money they have. And that's why I have to talk so fast to get everything in all at once. And then I cover the bailout and the war and so on. And it's got, you know, and sort of poking fun at myself the whole time. And I think it's pretty effective, especially for people who are fed up with the way things are going and fed up with politics.
Well, that's tremendous, and I have to commend you. Out of the people who came out of the 9/11 Truth Movement, a lot of them have not been able to adapt to the new situation of 2008 and have fallen by the wayside, or they've lapsed into irrelevance, or they simply think they can repeat the same slogans and the same analysis, even though the situation has radically changed. So you have shown that you are a man for all seasons compared to that.
Well, thanks, Webster. You know, you've actually been an inspiration to me on this. You're probably the single biggest reason I went ahead and ran for Congress. You've been consistently ahead of the curve on some of these things, and so I thank you for that.
Now, why don't you tell us your website and how people can contribute, and also maybe if you have some some meetups or some places where people can report if they want to volunteer who are in your district or near it?
Right. The website is barrettforcongress.us. That's B-A-R-R-E-T-T, and then you spelled out F-O-R-Congress.us. And at the website, you'll see my phone number and email, as well as the phone number and email for my campaign advisor, Rolf Lindgren. So you can contact us, and if you want to go out and help get out the vote, that would be great.
Any special place that people can go? I mean, are you going to have people come? Do you have an office where people can show up or a location if they want to volunteer on the weekend or on election day?
Unfortunately, Webster, I don't. I've had kind of a logistical problem come up here in the last bit of the campaign. So I have a great campaign headquarters, but the problem is it's way out in the middle of the woods. So it's great for me. It's got DSL and it's in the middle of nowhere, but it's not a real good meetup spot. You know, I may be going down to La Crosse. There's a cafe called Jules Cafe. I think it's J-U-L-E-S, Jules Cafe in La Crosse. And that's where I'll probably be on election night. So that would be a good place to go anyway. It's the best sort of bohemian cafe in my district.
And how would you say, finally, how would you describe the mood of people? What's your sense of mass psychology as we go into this final weekend?
Well, you know, Webster, you're probably not going to be too happy with this, and I'm not overjoyed with it completely either. But, you know, I sense that a whole lot of people have gotten sucked into this Obama thing, and so they're happy that this past administration of traitors and war criminals and 9/11 perpetrators will be gone, and I share that. But at the same time, I think their hopes that an Obama administration is going to save the world may be, shall we say, somewhat misplaced.
Well, I think it comes down to a failure of imagination. That is, a lot of people have concluded that Bush and Cheney are the worst possible alternative, that nothing could be worse. But unfortunately, there are some other people who have got a pretty good imagination, and they can think of things that are worse. And I'm afraid some of that may be headed our way if that kind of mentality prevails. But I'm not sure that it will, and I think there's still a lot of uncertainty, let's say, in the result, so much so that I would urge people to continue to mobilize. And from my point of view, I've been describing that. So we want to thank you, Kevin. We want to congratulate you. We want to urge people who are anywhere near there to support you, people in the district to come out and vote for you and to help you in any way possible. We want to give your website again, and we'll be off.
Okay. Thank you, Webster. I'm at barrettforcongress.us. Barrett for Congress.us. And thanks for everything you do, Webster.
Thank you, and
great
best of luck in the election. And we'll be looking for you probably next week and see how it went, huh?
Sounds good.
Okay. Congratulations to Kevin Barrett for running a wonderful campaign and raising these issues, including the bailout, and keeping the faith. We'll be back in a minute.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Your host, Webster Tarpley, in Washington, D.C. Just a few more notes on how to vote. Vote to stop Obama at all costs. Do not take the leap into the abyss. 1922 and 1933 remind you of what that could mean. There is no comparison between just another reactionary or bourgeois regime and a movement of fanatics, cultists, Kool-Aid drinkers, gutter snipes, goons, thugs, and fervently idealistic students. Because that is what Mussolini put together between 1919 and 1922, the March on Rome. The March on Rome is not a top-down phenomenon. It wasn't the army marching. It wasn't the secret police marching, at least not openly. There were quite a few. But it is to create a piece of political theater that allows repressive measures to be institutionalized in a kind of a police and goon partnership. In other words, the mob that comes to burn out your newspaper or radio station is got the support of the local cops. That's what we're seeing with the Obama campaign, and that's what Mussolini pioneered. So vote to stop Obama. Vote to punish anyone who supported the bailout, and vote to preserve divided government. Right now, with the Congress, the House and the Senate moving towards the Democrats, fine. Get rid of some of these reactionaries. Not everybody running as a Democrat for the House or the Senate is of the same low level as Obama. I mean, most of them are not. Many of them are not. There are plenty of honest Democrats in the House and the Senate. But then solve the problem of the presidency. And it means that you've got to look for alternatives. And those alternatives can be whatever is congenial to you. And hopefully you're going to think about what is the most effective anti-Obama vote. In some places, that is to vote for the obvious reactionary alternative. Better a reactionary than a fascist. Sometimes it would mean Ralph Nader. Sometimes Cynthia McKinney. Sometimes Baldwin of the Constitution Party, sometimes the Libertarian Bar. There are even a couple of other candidates you can find in certain places. That's a possibility. But remember, don't regard voting as a sacrament. You're not marrying anybody. Strategic voting is the key. Remember that you've got to come out of this with the least worst alternative, and that is divided government, gridlock, partisan paralysis, the continuous filibuster, if you will. The more filibuster, the better. And above all, we must avoid, this is the one caveat on the Democrats, we must avoid a situation where the Senate Democrats get a filibuster-proof majority or supermajority of 60 votes. That is the limiting factor. So basically you might say vote Democrat for the House. Now we get into various kinds of labyrinths, I guess. Obviously you're not voting for Pelosi. You're voting as a counterweight to hopefully the reactionary McCain. But in the Senate, watch out what you do in the Senate, because you do not want the Democrats to come out of that with a totalitarian veto-proof, but above all filibuster-proof majority. And this means that you're voting for gridlock. You do not want a one-party state. The Obama-Pelosi-Reid combine, the repo clique, means the Mussolini-fascist corporate state. Remember also, Obama has gathered to himself the most rotten elements of the Democratic Party, the Howard Deans, the dregs of the exhausted Kennedy machine, and many, many others, political opportunists, racketeers, grafters, vote fraud artists, the Acorn, this entire unsavory apparatus, all gravitating to Obama. Defeat Obama, and this machinery is dealt a severe blow. You've also got to remember the obvious. Obama is Wall Street's candidate. If you want to convince yourself of that, turn on the television for 10 minutes on any of the networks in the news broadcast, and you will see that Barkey is their darling. So all of these reasons, stop Obama, punish the bailout, go for divided government, partisan gridlock, and paralysis. And do not regard your vote as a sacrament. You're voting strategically to avoid the worst, not in some tortured gesture of impotent rage or whatever it is against the system. Above all, don't fall prey to the idea that all these candidates are the same, because the one-party state under the repo clique, the Obama-Pelosi-Reid regime, is much, much worse than divided government. Now, yesterday we had Phil Berg going to the United States Supreme Court Thursday afternoon, the 30th of October. This is a tremendous achievement for Phil Berg and for the people that have supported him. His website, Obama Crimes, is now approaching 100 million hits. And if Obama doesn't like all this, he just has to do one thing or two things. One thing would even help him a great deal. Come forward with the valid vault copy, the detailed birth certificate of what he alleges is his birth in Hawaii. Why won't Obama present his full detailed birth certificate, not certificate of live birth, not a certificate of live birth that's been tampered with and forged and altered, but the vault copy, the clean, detailed copy, time of birth, parents, where they live, the physician, the hospital, the details of a birth. Anything less than this is absolutely inadequate. You can't get a U.S. passport with anything less than a version of the vault copy. So Berg was there at the Supreme Court yesterday. He deposited a detailed legal brief. This has been printed up. In the Supreme Court of the United States, Philip J. Berg, Esquire, petitioner, arguing in counsel pro se against Barack Hussein Obama Jr., Barack Hussein Obama Jr. et al., who are the respondents. The et al. Are the Democratic National Committee, the Federal Elections Commission, and the Secretary of State of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, because there's also a state aspect in it. And what Obama, what Phil Berg is looking for in the Supreme Court is, first of all, this is submitted to Justice David Souter, who is the justice who oversees cases originating within the Third Federal Circuit Court of Appeals in Philadelphia. Application to Justice Souter for immediate injunction to stay the presidential election of November 4th, 2008, and a writ of certiorari. Certiorari meaning that this has got to be decided now. In other words, it's got to be argued out very, very quickly in the federal district court. So this is what Berg presented, and it was deposited on the Thursday before the Tuesday to make it clear. A very good press conference held by Berg out in front of the Supreme Court. Present were Fox News, the Estonian television, a couple of internet websites were there with their cameras and other journalists. And it was a press conference of about 30 minutes with lots and lots of details, basically covered the entire waterfront. And people who are familiar with this, who have been listening to this program. Let me just try to point out two interesting things with this. First of all, in the papers, of course, there's the complete text of the opinion issued by Judge Surik in Philadelphia. And this contains the argument about standing. In other words, Surik never adjudicated the arguments made by Phil Berg concerning the facts about Obama, where he was born, but only the question of standing. Now, with this, we enter into a realm, you've got to imagine the novel Catch-22, which has been written by Franz Kafka. That will give you an idea of what this opinion reads like. And I'll discuss this in a minute when we come back on World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley in Washington, D.C., discussing the legal brief submitted by Philip J. Berg of Philadelphia to the United States Supreme Court on Thursday, the 30th of October, looking for an immediate injunction to stop the presidential election unless and until Barack Hussein Obama produces a birth certificate, the vault copy, not some hooked-up forged version of a certificate of live birth, but birth certificate with the details, which he has not done. And it's getting to be amazing with Berg's website approaching 100 million hits, significant public relations damage to Obama, but he's willing to eat the damage. He will not allow the birth certificate to be to be made public. What is Obama hiding? He's hiding the fact that he wasn't born inside the United States, its territories, possessions, military bases, airplane ships, or military bases. So therefore, he's not eligible. He's also hiding the fact, separately from that, that he's naturalized into Indonesian citizenship. But interesting is to go back to the Federal District Court, Eastern District of Pennsylvania, Judge Surik. Here we have this argument about standing, because this is how they threw Berg out of the they refused to grant the motion in the district level. The judge writes, and this is amazing, I reiterate, a candidate's ineligibility under the natural born citizen clause of the Constitution does not result in an injury in fact to voters. Sounds like Catch-22 written by Franz Kafka. I repeat, Judge Surik writes, rejecting Berg's appeal in the Court of Original Jurisdiction, the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, to reiterate, a candidate's ineligibility under the Natural Born Citizen Clause does not result in an injury in fact to voters. And then he has a footnote saying, we find that Chief Justice Warren Burger's observation in an earlier case, the Richardson case, is pertinent here. And Berger wrote, it can be argued that if respondent is not permitted to litigate this issue, no one can do so. It seems to be the case here. But Berger says, in a very real sense, the absence of a particular individual or class to litigate these claims gives support to the argument that the subject matter is committed to the surveillance of Congress and ultimately to the political process. So it essentially means that there's nobody, no agency, no part of the government, and no citizen, group of citizens, class, or other litigant who can say, we demand that you enforce this clause of the Constitution, and we demand that you determine whether this person who wants to get his hands on the thermonuclear button and all the secret briefings and all the state secrets of the United States and seize state power. There's no instance in the government, there's no place where the authority is located to say, show your birth certificate, Barkey. Plunk your magic twanger, Froggy, show your birth certificate, Barkey. Doesn't exist. So we're left in a juridical vacuum with Franz Kafka completing his great novel, Catch-22. And of course, as Berg points out in his press release, the argument of standing is the heart of the matter, and that who does have standing? Apparently nobody does. So if Berg can't do it, then nobody can do it. And it means that there's no ability of anybody to enforce the Constitution by simply saying to Obama, present your birth certificate or be thrown off the ballot. Congress will not do it. They're sold out to Obama. That's the problem with Congress. And the other side of it, of course, is that the political process. Well, that's what we have to appeal to. We're hoping that Justice Souter will take the case, and meaning that there will then be hearings, that there'll be an evidentiary hearing, and that there'll be other legal proceedings that will take place. And again, if Obama doesn't like all this, if Obama wants the election to be held on time, produce your birth certificate, meaning lift your ban on the state of Hawaii who want to bring forward the birth certificate. Tell the governor of Hawaii, this Lingle or whatever her name is, that she's got to produce the vault copy of the birth certificate allegedly being kept in the vaults of the state of Hawaii. But, of course, we have our doubts. Now, when you talk to left liberals about this, you find the most unbelievable reactions. These are people, of course, who have been screaming, Bush and Cheney trampled the Constitution. Bush and Cheney trampled the Constitution. Of course they do. But now we get, and one left lib brought this up at the in the press conference in front of the Supreme Court, aren't you doing all this just on a legalism? Legalism. Well, what if one part of the Constitution, an entire clause of the Constitution, is dismissed as just an arid legalism, just legal formalities, who cares about this, let's get on with it, then, of course, you have opened the door to anarchy, civil war, the breakdown of society, the end of the rule of law, and every other evil. You're also basically saying that the protections afforded to us citizens in the Constitution will be meaningless under Obama. The freedom of speech, the freedom of the press, the freedom of assembly, the freedom of association, all of that, those are just legalisms, you left libs. Or another one says, this is just not an important thing. Well, unfortunately, the Constitution, it cannot be simply cut into shreds like Chico Marx cutting the clauses out of a contract. This is the path into absolute anarchy, and the anarchy then ends in civil war. Another left lib commented, if I were Obama, I would ignore this demand. Well, again, if you want to get your hands on the thermonuclear button, because that's what the issue is, we get to know everything about you. There's no private sphere for somebody who wants to control the thermonuclear button, because if you send up those missiles, you're going to impinge on the private sphere of my family and myself. And therefore, you have no private sphere. We want to know everything about you. We want to know where you were born. We want to know who your associations were. We want to know everything about your life. There is nothing that is shielded from scrutiny, because everything is relevant to issues of character and trust and who a person is. We had Jimmy Hu in 1976 with a catastrophic Trilateral Commission puppet presidency. Now we've got Barky Hu from nobody knows where. And this is a leap into the abyss. So keep following Berg at ObamaCrimes.com. Again, the total hits approaching and by now exceeding, I believe, 100 million hits. And keep putting this out on the talk shows and the internet postings. Now, we're in the Thursday to Friday area. The Thursday to Friday before the Tuesday of a general election are generally the times when the last-minute tapes and revelations come forward. We are expecting the Michelle Obama racist outburst to the African Press International News Service, where she goes into a tirade about how Africans are required to support Obama. We're also waiting for the Hate Whitey tape, which had been reported back in May to June against Michelle Obama. This has not come forward yet. It would have been technically the time to bring this forward would have been Thursday to Friday. Well, as I record this, it's still Friday. It's Halloween, so maybe this is the time to bring forward the Hate Whitey tape. I would simply point out to the fact, though, that the impotence and cowardice of McCain has caused him to declare all references to the racist provocateur and foundation operative Jeremiah Wright as taboo. McCain has banned any reference to that in organizations controlled by him. And it may well be that since the Michelle Obama Hate Whitey tape took place at a conference in Wright's church with Madame Farrakhan sitting next to Madame Michelle of the Broken Souls, that somehow this is covered by McCain's ban. I only hope that there are 527s who are not subject to this muzzling, because these are foundation operatives, ruling class operatives of the worst type, who need to be exposed as wreckers and dividers. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is your host, Webster Topley in Washington, D.C., reminding you to get your copies of Obama, the Postmodern Coup, the Making of a Manchurian Candidate, and Barack H. Obama Jr., I suppose we should have put in there, but Barack H. Obama, the Unauthorized Biography, both available from Amazon.com. One other element concerning guidelines on how to vote. Vote to stop Obama. Vote to punish any elected official who supported the bailout. Vote to come out of it with a divided government, avoiding the veto-proof, filibuster-proof majority of the Democrats in the Senate. In other words, you've got a reactionary gang and a fascist gang. All you can hope to do is play the reactionaries against the fascists and somehow balance them and neutralize them in that way. That is the only conceivable approach to this entire election. The question of fascist repression by Obama, the situation of human rights and freedom of speech The left liberal, of course, the naive view is that this will automatically improve under Obama. All signs point in the exactly opposite direction. We're talking about the arrest of Larry Sinclair at the National Press Club in June on a hooked-up indictment created by Beau Biden, the nepotistic, corrupt son of vice presidential candidate Joe Biden. The Burlington incident, where an innocent question about Obama's links to Brzezinski gets you thrown to the ground, arrested, and held in jail for 36 hours. We've also got the attempts of the Obama campaign to punish news organizations, Dallas Morning News, Washington Times, New York Post, all banned from Obama's campaign plane because they didn't endorse the perfect master. And I would point to, for people listening to this network and these radio programs here on Genesis Communications and similar kinds of alternative media, the hate crimes legislation of Pelosi and company is extremely broad. And the fairness doctrine espoused by Pelosi, Reid, and I think by Obama, is also an open door to suppress dissent. The Obamazoids, remember, called into WGN Chicago when Professor Kurtz was there and said, we don't want the Bill Ayers question discussed. We want this to end. We want this silenced. This is the mentality of the totalitarian liberal. This is what you have with the Axelrods, the Favreaus, and the Ploofs of our time. These are people who wish to stifle dissent. And remember, the Democratic Party is much more aggressive in voting against free speech and acting against free speech than the Republicans. The Republicans are inclined to think that what counts is money and organization, and ideas don't count that much. You can look for Obama and Biden to do much, much more to muzzle and stifle dissent. In other words, those Michigan prosecutors and sheriffs who say, if you lie about Obama, you'll be subject to criminal charges. If you attack Obama, you'll lose your Federal Communications Commission license. All of this points to the dimension of fascism, which goes far beyond what any reactionary would do. The reactionaries, Bush and Cheney, of course, passed the Patriot Act. But we've been broadcasting all through those years. Genesis has continued on its useful course with a very broad range of opinions, and that's in the face of the onslaught of Bush and Cheney. Look for Obama to be much, much worse. Now, the other aspects, the meme of the idea that there's some threat to Obama was brought up this week by the FBI and related authorities. And this is very, very interesting. You'll remember that as the 9/11 myth was in the course of decaying, as it became more and more absurd and incredible to believe the official 9/11 story, there were these maladroit attempts to refresh and refurbish the myth. And that took the form of the Fort Dix Six. Remember the six alleged Arab terrorists who wanted to break into Fort Dix and start shooting? There was a clique of mentally deficient individuals who thought that they could destroy Kennedy Airport by attacking certain pipelines. There was the fertilizer plot in Canada. Somebody wanted to attack the Canadian Pacific Tower using a fertilizer infernal machine. Probably the most ridiculous of all was the liquid terrorism plot of the Tony Blair clique in London in the summer of 2006 and so forth. Now we've got the same kind of thing being done by the FBI in favor of Barkey to somehow pump up this idea, and this has been a pattern now for some weeks and months, the idea that there's a threat to Barkey. We have two racist skinheads, one from Arkansas, one from Tennessee, who come up with a fantastic plot. The details, you can find them, involving attacking a school, robbing gun shops, getting dressed up in white tuxedos, and making a flying attack using high-powered firearms from a car. All of this simply at the level of mythomania. In other words, you get a bunch of mentally deficient or mentally retarded individuals together, and you can get them to tell tall tales about what they want to do. And as long as there's some kind of recording device implanted there, you can generate a mass of absolutely absurd verbiage about what these people are going to do. And in many cases, of course, they have no weapons, they have no tickets, they have no chemicals, they have no means of doing the stuff that they talk about. So it's clear now that the intelligence establishment, of course, is in favor of Obama. Watch for vote fraud in favor of Obama. The biggest pro-Democratic Party vote fraud since 1976 is now in the works. That was 1976, the year when Walter Mondale kicked off Election Day early in the morning by saying, vote early, vote often. Ohio was the epicenter. These things were proven by the late D. Stephen Pepper, distinguished art historian who nevertheless worked with Congressman Guy Vanderjagt of Michigan to prove vote fraud on a massive scale in New York State and in Ohio, all in favor of trilateral commission boys Carter Mondale, who later bought you Brzezinski and Volcker. We also see the LaRouche websites are also putting forward delirious statements about Obama's life being in danger. This, I think, is also done in very, very bad faith. There is one option, which is the following. If you look at Benazir Bhutto had been brought back to Pakistan in late 2007 with the idea that she would be the centerpiece of a people power coup against the government of President Musharraf. However, it became obvious that she wasn't getting there, that she was faltering, and at that point she was liquidated. There is this possibility, but there is no sign so far that this is the situation in the United States. Naturally, I'm not saying that this is not possible 1 to 2 to 3 years down the road. It's eminently possible. But I don't think that the intelligence community is going to create a huge covert operation using tens of billions and hundreds of billions of dollars of free publicity to build up Obama and then essentially discard him before getting full use, full value out of their investments. Now, we've also got, in the last moments, in addition to the African Press International tape coming up, we think, in the next 24 hours or so, also a series of revelations about Bill Ayers. And, of course, this is absolutely critical. Bill Ayers, the foundation-funded operative in what the average person would think of as a government agent, but specifically and technically a foundation-funded operative working as a wrecker to destroy social movements that might challenge Wall Street. Bill Ayers and Bernardine Dorn are the gravediggers of 1968. They are the gravediggers of revolution. They are the gravediggers of the peace movement, the student movement, and other progressive movements. We have now reports that Bill Ayers might be the author, the real ghostwriter of Barkey's biography there, the family story, Dreams of My Father. We've got the Khalidi tape, which is being withheld by the Los Angeles Times, showing that Bill Ayers and Bernardine Dorn were fixtures in Obama's social circle, his best friends. This was the farewell dinner for Khalidi. We'll talk about this in a minute when we come back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
In Washington, D.C., more about Bill Ayers, Bernardine Dorn, the foundation-funded wreckers, the gravediggers, saboteurs of the 1968 peace movement, student movement, and other movements. We see from this Khalidi tape, as reported, the one that the Los Angeles Times is so helpfully suppressing, so that it will not damage Barkey's cause, that Ayers and Dorn are indeed fixtures, intimate friends of Michelle and Barkey, so that when Khalidi, the, what can we call him, likely U.S. asset, who is moving then from the reactionary University of Chicago to the reactionary campus of Columbia University, the one that was most pro-Mussolini back in the 20s and 30s, where Barkey himself went. Bill Ayers and Bernardine Dorn are part of the festivities. Now, again, Khalidi simply seems to be someone who conduits funds from the U.S. intelligence community to certain factions of the PLO, which notoriously we have, right? In the past couple of weeks, we're told that papers found in Iraq have indicated that Abu Nidal was to some extent a U.S. agent. And, of course, he was. The Abu Nidal Central Committee was a joint stock company of the U.S., the Israelis, the British, probably the French, and probably others. Maybe the Soviets had a piece of that, too, as well as other as Middle Eastern countries. So that's Khalidi, and that's what is being withheld. Now, the other thing that people have gotten their hands on is the Prairie Fire, the 1974 manifesto of the Weather Underground. And in there we find that it is dedicated to, among others, Sirhan Sirhan, the assassin, well, the patsy who is accused of having killed Robert F. Kennedy. And if you look in my book, Obama, the Unauthorized Biography, we got to go back to one of the central events in the lives of these people, which is the last weatherman legal above-ground meeting in Flint, Michigan, in late December of 1969, after the days of rage, but a couple of weeks before the bomb went off in the Greenwich Village brownstone, killing Diana Alton, the girlfriend of Bill Ayers at that point. And here we find, in the wonderful account by Liberation News Service, the weathermen sing songs such as "I'm Dreaming of a White Riot," "Communism is what we do," "We need a red party," and they chant "Women power, struggling power, Red Army power, Sirhan Sirhan power, Charlie Manson power, power to the people, and off the pig." Now, if you're disturbed by Sirhan Sirhan, as you should be, you should also be concerned about the part involving Manson. And remember, this is the the centerpiece of this entire thing, is Bernardine Dorn saying that Manson's murders are the model for the revolution that she wants. And we're also told then, with Ted Gold, who's about to lose his life then in the bombing explosion, the bomb factory explosion in New York City, the same guy, Ted Gold, of the Mad Dog subgroup of the Weathermen, says, "An agency of the people of the world has to be set up to run the U.S. economy and society after the defeat of U.S. imperialism abroad. A critic in the Weatherman meeting speaks up, saying, in short, if the people of the world succeed in liberating themselves before American radicals have made the American Revolution, then the Vietnamese, the Africans, and the Chinese will move in and run things for white America. This sounds like a John Bircher's worst dream." And Gold says, "Well, if it will take fascism, we'll have to have fascism. If it will take fascism, we'll have to have fascism," says Gold. So the terminus ad quem, the end product of the entire Weatherman movement, was the conscious and open embrace of fascism. And this is the mentality of these people. This is Ayers, this is Dorn, and this is through elective affinities and long, many-decade associations, maybe going back to 1981, of Obama with Ayers and Dorn. They might have met at the edge of the Columbia campus in 1981 to 1983, something else for Barkey to keep hiding during that time. So Bernardine Dorn says, "Charles Manson, with his mass murder and race war overtones, that's the essence of the revolution." And the Weathermen chant, and Bill Ayers then writes, puts it on paper, "Sirhan Sirhan is a hero of their movement." I'm just wondering about Teddy Kennedy. and Caroline Kennedy and Robert Kennedy Jr., the son of the murdered Robert F. Kennedy. What do they think about Obama being such close friends with somebody who admires Sirhan Sirhan, the person who killed one of their family members? And there's also a reason for this. You'll remember that in 1968, the general political motion was towards an alliance of Robert F. Kennedy with Martin Luther King. And this would have been the united front of the entire population against Wall Street and against the political ruling class that the foundations are mobilized to prevent. In other words, to unify the labor movement, the civil rights movement, the student movement, and the peace movement, as well as the beginnings of the women's movement and other movements. To bring these together into a single political combination would have been to refurbish the Franklin D. Roosevelt coalition of 1932, to give that a new lease on life so that it could have dominated American life from 1968 to 2008. And this is what the assassinations were designed to prevent. Those of Robert F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King. So notice that the white weathermen, with their race war program, hate Robert F. Kennedy and celebrate his assassination, whereas the Jeremiah Wrights, the James Cones, the Floyd McKissicks, and the Stokely Carmichaels and the Rap Browns, the foundation-funded provocateurs who happen to be black, hate and revile Martin Luther King as a sellout and Uncle Tom and all the rest of it. So maybe it's clear now what these people are. They are wreckers. They are agents. Their goal is to destroy the popular movements, not bring them to any victory. We're also finding out more things about Obama's background. Frank Marshall Davis, there's a lot about him in Obama the Postmodern Coup. Turns out now, according to some accounts, to have been a drug pusher. So this is a man who is apparently a homosexual, a communist, and a drug pusher, and he's Obama's mentor. He is the famous Frank who appears so importantly in Dreams of My Father. And apparently he was selling all kinds of narcotics, and it may be that Obama's introduction into the realms of homosexuality and narcotics addiction, narcotics use at least, took place under the supervision of Frank Marshall Davis out there in Hawaii. That's according to one account. Back in a minute. Crisis Radio, your host Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. We're also getting threats from the left liberal community. The case of Erica Jong is interesting. Erica Jong, back in 2006, happened to come on Entertainment Tonight or the CNN headline news program there with A.J. Hammer after some discussion of 9/11, and she was asked, what do you think about that? And Erica Jong was quite useful. She said, yes, all this stuff needs to be investigated. But unfortunately, she was also pro-Hillary during the springtime. Now she has degenerated. She has gone into the moral and political abyss of bankruptcy with Obama. And she's now saying that if Obama doesn't get what he wants, i.e. the White House and the thermonuclear button, we're going to have race war and civil war. Nice stuff from Erica Jong. And what it simply points to is that this candidacy, the entire logic of this candidacy, is towards civil strife of the most exacerbated kind. And race war, remember, is the weatherman program of 1969. Read Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography, and you will see that in their last public outing there in Flint, Michigan, in late December of 1969, the weathermen talk about the necessity for catharsis, to purge the society with violence, in the United States, a race war is indispensable to overcome the heritage of colonialism, imperialism, and racism. In other words, these people are absolutely nuts. And the question, therefore, is, with the elective affinity of Obama for Ayers and Dorn and so many others from the Weatherman clique, this is an elective affinity. This is reflective of his values, what he likes, how he thinks. Are you going to put a weatherman in the White House, a crypto weatherman, then becoming an open weatherman? Let us not find out about this stuff. We've also got Obama's heartlessness, his aunt Zaituni that we read about in Dreams of My Father, his uncle Omar, and indeed these two are living in Boston, it turns out, living in poverty. All of Obama's strutting and preening about charity and doing something for the least of your brothers, all exposed as cynical boilerplate copy churned out by Axelrod, Favreau, and Plouffe, the demagogues who run this AstroTurf campaign, the brother in Nairobi, all of them living in abject poverty. Obama has not lifted a finger for them. You may remember Michael Dukakis had a brother, Stalian, who committed suicide. And one of the questions about Dukakis was, didn't you realize that your brother was having some kind of problem? And he apparently didn't think so. Another one would be Ronald Reagan, right? If you ever go to Dixon, Illinois, as I once did, Reagan's boyhood home, you look around and say, well, you know, if old Ronald Reagan had good feelings about his hometown, you'd expect to find, you know, some subcenter of the General Services Administration. He must have done something for these people at some point along the line to create a few jobs, a little bit of something, nothing. So when you find callous indifference to your brother, to your close relatives, to your people in your hometown, I think that allows you to read the inflated promises, the messianic rhetoric, in the proper way. Now let's look a little bit more at the mechanics of the race. If you look at these polls again, you will find that the exaggeration by the controlled Wall Street media is overwhelming. So much so that we have a Pew Charitable Trust poll. Remember, this is foundation funded in the extreme, right? The Pew Foundation, Pew family, of course, supporting extreme reactionary trending over to fascist political causes back in the 1930s, and now preening themselves as being progressive and, of course, Malthusian and green and all the rest of this. They say that they have even changed the criteria in their poll to reflect the groundswell of youth and minorities for Obama. Same thing with the Gallup poll. They've got an expanded poll, which is obviously just for Barkey, because it means that they've, for the first time in history, thrown out the methodology that they've used up until now, and they've now got an expanded poll, which is just for Barkey. It's an open admission that they're attempting to get him elected. We have to go through these national polls, obviously, with a grain of salt. It looks like, again, a 3 to 4 point race in favor of Obama in terms of the more reliable of these polls, if it's possible to say that. But we know from the primaries that Obama always falls short to the extent of 5 or 10% when the votes are actually counted. In particular, I remember the Zogby poll in Pennsylvania had Obama 10 points stronger than he turned out to be in reality, which was the biggest set-piece battle of the entire primary season, and Obama lost it. There are indications that Obama may be in trouble in Pennsylvania right now. Murtha, his main ally, who has unfortunately tied his fortunes to the Pelosi clique, Murtha is saying that he needs another $1 million to be able to keep his seat in Congress. This is after Murtha described his own constituents as racists and rednecks. What is being expressed there is class hatred. It is the hatred of the working class, the hatred of blue-collar workers. And this is basically class warfare, but not the kind that Limbaugh talks about. This is the hatred of the financier and the banker for the blue-collar worker. And Murtha and company, now having become agents for those financiers and bankers, are expressing that point of view. Generally speaking, you could say that in order for Obama to feel safe in an election or a state, he would need a 10% cushion based on what we've seen in the primaries. And he's not getting it, so it means that this is now open. Obama, we see ahead in Florida by 4 points, according to some. The most recent Reuters Zogby has it as a tie in Florida. North Carolina, a tie. Virginia, Obama up by 4. It's not enough. Ohio, Obama up by 4. Not enough. Missouri, McCain up by 2-3. Colorado, Obama up by 6. It's still not enough. Nevada, Obama up by 4-5. I'm afraid the people at that newspaper in New Mexico might be in the same class with the Chicago Tribune, right? The Dewey Wins headline. Buy some copies of that newspaper out there, because it's going to be a collector's item, I think, before too long, along with that Dewey Wins headline in the Chicago Tribune. So if you look at where the candidates are going, you will see that most of them, be it Obama or Biden or McCain or Palin, they seem to be going to places like Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida, which means that this is an absolutely typical race. It is not the millenarian exercise in utopian supremacy that the Obama people had been telling us about and promising. So it is a completely open exercise. I won't go through the details of the House and the Senate. It's clear that the Democrats ought to get 10 or 15 or 20 more seats in the House, and that quite a number of Senate seats are going to be lost by the Republicans. Of course, if it's Mitch McConnell, this is of course richly deserved. The only problem with this, of course, is that if you get a filibuster-proof majority for the Democrats in the Senate, this risks exacerbating the tendencies that we otherwise see towards the fascist corporate state. So what we see essentially is a cross current. One current is the hatred and resentment against Bush, Cheney, and the neocons, the desire for revenge. Understandable. But remember, it is not a good idea to be blinded by hatred. It is not a good idea to think about Bush and Cheney as the worst possible outcome. The other current, fear and loathing of Obama, the fear of the leap into the abyss, which will prove stronger. Anyway, I urge you to get out, vote to stop Obama, punish the people who supported the bailout, and come out of this with divided government. That's the only shred of hope that we can offer in a grim situation. Perhaps to get one or two more guests on in the last segment here, but otherwise let's look at the foreign policy situation. We have this very interesting statement made by Robert Gates, the boss of the Pentagon, and this is at a meeting of the Carnegie Endowment, currently chaired by Jessica Matthews, who is part of the New York investment banking community by her family pedigree. Robert Gates is likely to remain in power as boss of the Pentagon under Barky Obama, indicating the continuity of the Principals Committee and the fact that changing the puppet president is not the decisive factor that some people might think. But then again, a lot of people still think that Bush and Cheney are in power and don't realize that the Principals Committee of Gates, Rice, Mullen, and Paulson is actually running the government and has been since about April, May at the very latest. What Gates says in this is the story of the secret meeting of Zbigniew Brzezinski with the Iranian prime minister, defense minister, and foreign minister. Foreign minister would have been Yazdi in Algiers, November 1st, 1978. Yes, 1978. And this was the 25th anniversary of the Algerian Revolution, the FLN. And Brzezinski met with the political leaders that had been put in power by Khomeini, or vice versa, associated with Khomeini, and laid it out for them strategically, as Gates said, saying, the United States will be pleased to continue shipping weapons to Iran because we have a common enemy, which is the Soviet Union, to your north. So we need to have a common cause between the U.S. and the Khomeiniac regime. And naturally, they said, we want the Shah. Brzezinski basically said national honor forbids this, meaning that the political fortunes of the Twilight of a Puppet, Jimmy Carter, do not allow appeasement in quite so naked a form. But then they arranged, in some kind of a sidebar meeting, the taking of the hostages, which was going to happen in late 1978. And this then became the pretext used inside the bureaucracy for keeping up the arms shipments to Khomeini, no matter what, saying if we don't keep shipping these advanced weapons to Iran, why then the hostages may be in danger if they get really angry with us. This is the kind of foreign policy we can expect from Zbigniew Brzezinski, Mark Brzezinski, and above all Obama, who fits this model to a T. You need somebody who looks like Sir Neville Chamberlain, that is to say, a weakling in appearance, but in reality a ferocious warmonger. And this is pretty much what Lord Sir Neville Chamberlain did back in the 1930s. Now, as we look around at the panorama of foreign policy events, the attack on Syria, 8 miles into Syria, 8 dead, a couple of dozen wounded. The cover story, of course, terrorists, but in reality, this has got to do with the fact that Syria is a country where the basic impulse of the population is pro-Russian. All during the Cold War, Syria was closely allied with the Soviets. It's different from Iran. In Iran, the essential impulse is anti-Russian, and this had to do with, you know, the fact that the Iranians were on the side of the U.S. during most of the Cold War. But the Syrians, it's quite different. So this is a punishment and a warning to Syria, along with that Israeli attack of a year and a half ago, or a little bit more than a year ago. This is a warning to Syria saying, we don't like the fact that you've got the Soviet, the Russian Mediterranean fleet now being based in Tartus in Syria. We don't like the fact that you're getting advanced Russian surface-to-air missiles, so watch out, Syria. I think other explanations of this are absolutely spurious. And anything that has to do with the war on terror, of course, was always spurious, and now is even more spurious than it ever was. Another one is Pakistan. The U.S. continues to bomb the hell out of Pakistan, as demanded by Barack Obama. Now, the obvious means of retaliation that the Pakistanis have is to cut off supplies to Afghanistan. In other words, those supplies have to come in to the ports of Pakistan there in the northern part of the Indian Ocean, the Arabian Sea. And then they've got to be shipped overland into Afghanistan by truck convoys and other means. What if the Pakistanis say, look, we've had it up to here. You're bombing the hell out of our country. You're violating our sovereignty. You're mortifying and humiliating our government. You're not coming through here anymore. We're cutting off your transit rights. Now do what you want to do. And we're not giving you any air rights either. In other words, what this points to is that the Iraqi adventure and the Afghan adventure have the same obvious Achilles heel militarily, which is that the supply line is in the air. In the case of Iraq, as we talked about in past years on this program, the supply line to the U.S. forces in Iraq goes right across the Iranian front for about 1,000 miles through the Straits of Hormuz, up the Gulf, and then into that tiny, narrow area of Iraq that fronts, with Kuwait, of course, being also there. All of this can be easily interdicted by Iran if they once make up their mind to do it. Same thing now with Pakistan. You don't get supplies into Afghanistan so easily if you have to go it through Pakistan, and Pakistan is hostile. Now, we've also got the news, and this gets us back to China. China has been on the back burner a little bit, with the main focus being the Brzezinski onslaught against Russia. The Dalai Lama now says that he's sick and tired of negotiating with China. Are we headed towards a recrudescence of civil war in Tibet? Will the Islamic Party of Turkestan, the Turkestan Islamic Party, get into the act out there in Xinjiang province, Chinese Turkestan, Urumqi, and similar areas? All of these are harbingers of what things will look like under an Obama administration. The entire configuration is now marching under the control of the Principals Committee, and at least one member of the Principals Committee, actually two members, both Gates and Mullen, will be around, according to everything that we've heard. In the case of Gates, it's this guy Danziger, who works for Obama, that has signaled very, very broadly that he will stay. There will be continuity in the Pentagon. So half of the Principals Committee will remain in place, meaning that they will be making the decisions. And, of course, they march to the tune of a different drummer. Zbigniew Brzezinski is the dominant figure. You can see that when Gates says in his speech to the Carnegie Endowment, "I worked with Jessica Matthews for Dr. Brzezinski, and when we met with the Iranians, Dr. Brzezinski laid it out strategically that the main problem for the United States was the Soviet Union, i.e. Russia, and therefore this is the problem." So we're now headed into this. Now, the other one, of course, is Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Poland, and Ukraine. In the immediate aftermath of the U.S. presidential election, I think no matter who wins, look for an attempt by the Brzezinski-Gates crowd to try to goad Poland and or Ukraine in particular, but possibly also these smaller Baltic states, to begin interfering once the winter descends on northern and western Europe, to try to find pretexts and reasons to cut off the flow of natural gas from Russia into Western Europe, gas needed for cooking and heating. And as the Western Europeans begin to shiver and their teeth begin to chatter, look for a huge onslaught of brainwashing, mind-destroying propaganda, menticide campaign, that Russia is responsible for this stuff. It will not be Russia. It will be the Brzezinski clique. So we'd hope to get Phil Berg on, but he's obviously in demand. So I'm sure Phil Berg sends his best wishes, as we do to him. Check his website, Obama Crimes, during the weekend. Go there and give him a contribution. And remember, stop Obama at all costs. Punish anybody who voted for the bailout. And get a divided government out of this, or you will rue the day. Get active or get radioactive. Brzezinski is worse than the neocons. A fascist is worse than a reactionary. So mobilize.